how should a fleet look at itself and saying, I'm ready to be in a captive?
Well, the captive lines of business are auto, general liability, and workers' compensation. They're called the casualty lines, and that's what goes into the captive. If you're paying $200,000 or more in those three lines of business, you're probably going to be available to go to a captive.
Yep.
One of the first things I do right out of the gate, I put together a snapshot of how they would have performed in the captive had they been there for the last 5 to 6 years.
Fantastic.
And I mean, that just gives them
eyes open.
Either they're going, boy, we better get our act together, or they say, wow, we should have been in this 6 years ago.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the podcast Caution Wide Right, brought to you by Compliance Navigation Specialists. I'm Luke, your host, and today, basically, we want to answer the question, when can your growing fleet join a captive and potentially save money through insurance, and how? I mean, you might have heard about what a captive is throughout the years, heard the name or term before, but now is the time to really dive into all the details here with what a captive is and why it should be a goal for your fleet as you grow. With me today to help answer the question and many more is Todd Bergen, business insurance executive at McConkie Insurance, who has over, the company has over 20 years of experience with captive business. Todd, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for inviting me, Luke.
So I am curious about your background. What got you into the insurance industry and eventually to where you're, what you're doing today?
Well, like a lot of people in the insurance industry, it wasn't by design. I actually wanted to be a foreign currency futures broker. And
there you
go. So I graduated, and the year that I graduated, the guy I was going to be working for went bankrupt because it was a crash.
Yeah.
So I ended up in the insurance industry, and I was hired by one of the largest companies in the world at that time, Continental Insurance. And they spent a lot of time training me. I was trained in loss control, underwriting, and claims.
Wow.
And they eventually put me in the underwriting side, which is a nice place to start.
For sure.
They had started having financial problems after a number of years, so I ended up going to a couple regional carriers, and one of them had absolutely no loss control at all. So I was doing the underwriting and the loss control. So yeah, it gave me a real broad background to find out as what happened. And that company was so small that they also needed somebody to do some legal expert work for them, expert witness. And so that process really showed me the legal system and what truckers and anybody could get into and what was needed to make that much smoother if something did happen, something legally to them.
Among the three things there, loss control, underwriting, and expert witness, what's a big story that sort of stands out, that just sort of like that wow moment? I don't know. It could be.
Every time that we'd go in, if I was being deposed, I would sit there and I'd think, man, if these guys just did this little thing or just had this in place or this document in place, we wouldn't even be sitting here right now.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest things about that, Luke, is there's things called punitive damages, which aren't covered by insurance at all.
Correct.
So, a lot of times when I'm working with a client, I'm trying to position them so that legally they aren't on the stand and look like somebody who did something really horrible.
So that leads into the whole nuclear verdict piece of everything.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Is most of that damages the punitive damages that...
It's a combination.
It's a combination, yeah.
It's a combination, yeah.
And I know they try to weasel their way trying to find any kind of little thing that maybe not the driver, but the company's not doing right. And,
exactly.
Or even if you're doing the base minimum, you should be doing more. It's out there, and they try to needle you that way.
One of the things is the fleet safety program. And Luke, let's say you're a fleet owner and one of your drivers does something. And you're on the stand and they said, Luke, did you tell him he wasn't supposed to be driving drunk? Your answer is probably going to be, well, isn't that illegal? Luke, that's not the question. Did you tell him?
Yeah.
Well, I think we did. What date?
Yeah.
Do you remember when they, and then Luke, and then he walks over to get the jury and says, this guy didn't even know that his driver was driving drunk and never told him to his recollection. And now he hurt these people. And, it really looks bad.
Yeah.
It's not good optics at all.
Crazy. I am curious. So we usually ask our guests in the trucking industry, hey, what's your favorite trucking movie or a movie scene with trucks involved in it? I'll flip that too. You can answer that one, but favorite either insurance scene in a movie or a favorite commercial.
I just used to watch Moving On when I was a kid. I was back in the 70s. Yeah. So I mean, you had Will and they had the cab over, the old cab over. So yeah, that was a lot of fun just watching that.
Oh yeah.
And they always were fighting against the other guys who had the horrible trucks, and it was just a good So that, I mean, when I was at Continental, nobody wanted to do the trucks.
Oh, yeah.
So they said to me, they said, well, Todd, you want to do it? And I said, well, sure. And then wouldn't you know, like the first Friday after I got the job, there's a guy down in Louisiana, and he used to have a filing in each state.
Yeah.
And he's swearing on the phone at me. And I said, I'm the only guy here at like 4 o'clock on a Friday. I said, you better be nice to me. Yep. So I eventually learned what an e-filing was, because, and the typist knew more than I did, because they were the ones that used to type, you know, it was funny. They used to type all the policies. Nothing was computerized. So
yeah,
I learned what an e-form was anyway.
I'm curious about that. So, you know, why is it for insurance companies, why do they usually not want to get into and insure trucking companies?
Well,
that
didn't used to be the case.
Correct.
And there are companies called reinsurance companies.
Yeah.
And if you're an insurance company, you'll normally keep like the first $500,000 or $300,000, and then you'll send the rest of it off to another insurance company. Years ago, people would see those big numbers on the trucking and they, you know, oh, we can make all this money. It's going to be so great. And then after a couple of years, the losses would start coming in. Like, oh my gosh, you know, what do we do now? You know, and they would exit, and then somebody else would come in. You know, but after the nuclear verdict started to happen, it was just unbelievable how the reinsurance pulled back.
Yeah.
And a lot of companies are not, that were doing it years ago, are not doing it anymore. State Auto was one who I used to work for.
Right.
Westfield doesn't do it anymore. And it's a hard class, given that, you know, you can go years and not get anything and have one huge loss, and now all of a sudden you're underwater.
And you've been doing this for over 30 years mm-hmm. now. I'm curious, what, like, the first nuclear verdict that just comes to mind for you?
One of them is that not long ago, the bridge that burned.
Yeah.
That was,
gosh.
I they are not in business anymore, obviously. Yeah. I mean, you can't absorb that kind of a loss. But yeah, that's the biggest one I think of in Pennsylvania right out of the gate.
That was the I-95 one, right?
But there was years ago, we had and I'm not going to name the trucker, but yeah. I mean, they ran into the back of a car that had five people in it. Three of them were killed and two of them were paraplegics for the rest of their life. And,
yep.
You know, sad to say, I mean, you know, after you become a paraplegic, it costs a lot more than somebody that dies outright.
Exactly. Long-term.
Yeah.
Long-term healthcare costs there.
And those have just escalated along with that. I did an article for the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association back in 2017, and I called it The Perfect Storm.
Yes.
And it talked about everything that's coming into play, and they were all like, oh, Todd, you know, you're exaggerating. You're always, I said, no, it's
check,
coming.
Check.
2019, they were like, oh my God. Yeah, I said, yeah, here it comes.
Now, and it's interesting, you know, 2017, that's right when ELDs were coming mm-hmm. into place, yep. 2018, 2019 rollout. Do you see that? I mean, so safety innovation, cameras, forward-facing, backward-facing, you know, ELDs, do you see the safety technology as a big benefit for helping with this?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I used to call it like trying to manage truckers like herding cats.
Yes.
You know, you're herding cats. You don't know what they're doing out there, and they knew you didn't know.
Yep.
So here we go. But now, I mean, they can say, hey, you were at this location and then you made a hard break here. You know, we have a video camera of this situation. And sometimes the trucker doesn't even think they're doing something wrong, but it's a teaching moment for them to say, yes. Hey, you know, here's the best way to do that, especially if they're younger truckers.
Oh, for sure.
But to give you an example, I put one of my customers into a captive and I said, you know, you want dash cams, because part of the captive is you're paying for the first $100,000 of your loss.
Yep.
And they went, you know. Well, I would say about a year later, that one of their truckers was in an accident and he had a camera, he had his own camera in it.
Oh, interesting.
And they would have they'd have paid, I don't know how much, because yeah. the even the policeman like cited him. And then after they had that, they got out of it for absolutely nothing. And they were like, now what do you suggest? Which brand?
Which brand?
You know, it's a Samsara, you know, mm-hmm. you know, PeopleNet, what should I be doing? So yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. And, you know, we've interviewed actually some of those companies recently on our podcast, where it's like, hey, now this program, sometimes it's on, sometimes it's only on at certain times, or like when a safety event flickers or something like that. So like there's a whole process that, you know, drivers worrying about the camera question, especially mm-hmm. backward facing cameras, that there's different ways to approach that. Now I am curious, this all sort of rolls around, I believe it's your LinkedIn profile, your favorite quote, being risk management requires more than insurance alone. Can you elaborate?
Oh, sure. It's my favorite saying. Because when I, the reason I came out on the agency side, I would go to different, you know, like agents would send me, brokers would send me different types of submissions. And I'd say, well, don't you want to talk about this or that? Just give me what they had last year. And I went, wow. So I kind of went, man, these guys are really exposed.
Yeah.
So when I came out, I mean, yeah. And I did a lot with risk management, and it's identifying the hazards and then analyzing those hazards.
Yes.
And then figuring out, you know, what could happen, what the frequency could be, what the impact could be, and then finding loss control ways, risk management concepts to stop it from happening or mitigating it on the back end.
Exactly.
And then finally financing it, which is what the insurance is.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, if you haven't done your work, your risk management work up to the time when the insurance policy may not respond. And, you know, I tell people the insurance policy is about that thick. It doesn't take that many pages to say everything's covered.
Yep.
So almost everything in there is telling you what's not covered.
Exactly. That's a great point. You know, and that's, you know, one of the things here at CNS, our motto is, you know, proactive safety. You know, we want to make sure people are above board, ahead of the game. This is something that you can take advantage of and be prepared for, whether it's getting into an audit or, again, like looking good for insurance, and being a safe company on the roads. It's all about being proactive with it. And that's the safety tools. That's the what management, how are you managing, and what processes do you have in place, driver file management, all those different pieces to look good. So it's sort of definitely a balance with that sort of risk management.
Oh, absolutely.
Compliance, all of it. All right. So we danced around it a little bit, but let's officially dive into captive insurance. What is captive insurance?
Well, captive insurance is where you own part of your own. Now, we're talking about group captives.
Correct.
You own part of your own insurance company with the other members. You pay the first, like, say, $100,000 of each loss. But there are stop loss insurance on all of it. You're like your own insurance company. You're only going to retain the stuff that's predictable.
Right.
And then you're going to reinsure or have somebody else insure the stuff that goes catastrophic on you. So you basically have a chance of getting money back if you don't use up all of your loss funds. And that's where a lot of people, that's the usually what attracts people to it.
Right.
But there's so many other things that you can go along with. Like if you want to bring a driver on and you think that the driver's okay and the insurance company says, no way, you can go, that's okay. Well, in a captive, you can bring them on yourself. Now you still have to be selective because it's
correct.
Your money that's coming out of the pool. But
correct.
Yeah, you definitely want to have that. And another thing, in these days, if you have one of those catastrophic losses, the insurance company will just turn around and drop you.
Yes.
And then when you're at your least attractive point, now you have to go out into the market and try to find insurance. And that can be brutal.
Yes.
So, and normally, and that's what I like about the captive is it's really not subjective as it is when I was an underwriter. Mm-hmm. Like if I had a loss and they like that, they would say, oh, you better really jack the rates up because, you know, it might happen again, you know, and it might not happen for another 10 years. Now this guy's paying God knows what. With the captive, it's just math.
Right.
It's just pure math. It takes all the feeling, all the subjectivity out of it. Okay, you did this. Here's what your retention is. Here's what your loss funds are left with. Here's what you paid. And then when you do, there can be some assessments if you go over.
Sure.
But people get up, they kind of caught up in that. And I always tell them, I said, you know, in the standard market, they do the same thing. It's called a price increase.
Yes.
I said, it stays on bigger and for a longer time. I said, you and the captive spreads out those loss assessments. So it smooths out all the peaks and valleys of the insurance market.
Exactly. And so, and, you know, this could be a group of like, what, 20 like-minded companies. It could be different types of companies, different industries even. And then they sort of balance this with a pool of money, a pool of safety, and they're all sort of, again, they're the best of the best in sort of that safety mindset.
Yes.
Right.
They are, and it can, I mean, it's the newer ones start off with nobody and then
correct.
You know, grow up, but most of the ones we're looking at are usually have 100 members,
yes,
or more, and they do keep track of you through what's called an RCA, risk control assessment, and that's where we kind of come in, and that's where you guys come in. That's where we bring you guys in as kind of a supplement to what we do.
Yeah.
And so we can keep everybody compliant. And the ultimate goal is so that they have little low losses, so you know they
exactly.
get their money back, lower their insurance costs. So all the efforts they're putting in, they get you know, of course, there's every once in a while you're going to get hit. It's just the way it is.
It's insurance anyway, but yeah.
But yeah, it, and what you said, there's different types. There's one called heterogeneous, which means that there's a bunch of different industries. And then there's homogeneous, which is like all truckers or all roofers or whatever. And most of the people lately, we've been putting them into the trucking captives because it's just smoother. I mean, through the filings and everything. I mean, I don't have to wake up every day and remind them, hey, they need this done. You know, it's usually pretty smooth.
Do you find it more beneficial because you can say, hey, they're all truckers, but maybe they do different types of cargo, different types of, do you find that different variety as a company or different companies of value?
Most truckers can fit into a trucking captive.
Yeah.
If they're hazmat, that's another game.
That's true.
And we do have a captive for that as well. So, I mean, yeah, it just depends on what the reinsurers and what the captive fronting companies. And the fronting company is just the company that basically puts their paper on it. So it might be your own captive, but it's underwritten and everything by Hartford Insurance Company.
Exactly.
You know, so yeah, it to the world, it looks like you're insured with Hartford, but you're actually insured by
that makes sense. Yourself. All right, so... The idea of a captive, it sounds good, it looks good, it sounds like there's a little bit of an upfront cost. What is the sort of ideal situation? I'm growing my fleet, maybe throughout the years it's now approaching 20 drivers, maybe it's 30 drivers. What does it look like, whether it's a requirement or whether it's, you know, how should a fleet look at itself and saying, I'm ready to be in a captive?
Well, the captive lines of business are auto, general liability, and workers' compensation. They're called the casualty lines, and that's what goes into the captive. if you're paying $200,000 or more in those three lines of business, you're probably going to be available to go to a captive.
Yep.
One of the first things I do right out of the gate, I put together a snapshot of how they would have performed in the captive had they been there for the last 5 to 6 years.
Fantastic.
And I mean, that just gives them, I mean,
eyes
they're,
open.
They're, yeah. Either they're going, boy, we better get our act together. Or they say, wow, we should have been in this 6 years ago.
Right.
And usually that's the way it is. Yeah. Usually it works out that, especially since CSA and they started rating drivers as well as it used to be just the insurance companies. They gigged if anything went wrong. Now the drivers know that they're being watched and they're being recorded. And if they go for another job, they can pull up everything that's gone wrong. So yeah, it's become a whole different game. That changed the whole picture.
Interesting. And I know on the regulation side, there's things potentially changing with how FMCSA wants to look at companies, item response theory or other things. Nothing's official yet, but like there's, you know, that whole process changes, but again, that's just sort of changing the minimum standard of what it is to be a compliant company. Mm-hmm. We want to be above that. And we want to look good. What are sort of some of the key criteria that companies should meet? What should they be doing as a company, whether it's the management side, whether it's with software, whether it's with their vehicles or whatnot? What should they be doing in place now to prepare for the realities of maybe like the resume of getting into it?
Exactly. Well, that's where your broker really comes in.
Yeah.
Because they're going to give you a loss control visit up front.
Yeah.
And then after like 6 months, they're going to give you an RCA. So there's documents that should be in place. There's policies, procedures, you know, things that, you know, I've gone into. And one of the first things I look at is their SMS scores. Mm-hmm. And if it's really not in good shape, I go, we're going to need a couple years to get this back.
Exactly.
And here's something. And I said, for one thing, the one company I went to and I said, who is this driver? Yep. They said, well, he was an owner operator and he came here because he couldn't get insurance. I said, well, I can't figure out why. I said, he was every accident. It was like, he was just killing them. You know, their scores were horrible and he was the problem. I said, do you think we should get rid of him? I said, yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, hate to be that cold, but I mean, you know, that he's eating your lunch.
Yeah. And those scores and that safety information stays for potentially 3 years and then eventually will fall off. But
And, you know, one of the first things underwriters are going to look at, they're going to look at the CAB scores. And some truckers don't know what their CAB scores are.
Yep.
But it's like it's at the top of it has a traffic light, red, yellow, green. If you're green or yellow, you have a chance. If you're red, you're not getting into captive. So you need to improve in separate ways. Maybe it's different drivers, maybe it's training, maybe it's a bunch of different things. But the main thing when we go out is we do a whole risk analysis.
Yeah.
I mean, everything from, you know, how many trucks do you have? Where are they going? Doubles, triples? Are you, do you have team drivers? Are you going by yourself? How, you know, what are your IFTAs? How many miles are you doing a year? you know, how many miles per truck? You know, because there's different ways underage look at it. And I used to be that. So, I mean, I'm always thinking if I was looking at this, how would I want it to look? How would if I'm the owner, how do I want myself to look? And a lot of times I'll start to put together documents and things for them. And then you guys come in on other sides to help them with other items that, you know, so that moving forward, they keep up with what they need to do.
Exactly.
The PSPs, the MVRs, the driver qualification files, all those things come into play.
Exactly. So you brought up CAB scores, CAB, mm-hmm. And, you know, I know for our insurance division, CNS Insurance, like we can help companies pull those CAB reports and look at it. Can you explain, you know, again, you want the tools available to you to say, I want to look good, but I don't know what, do I even look good, right? You know, the CABs, or the FMCSA says one thing. So a CAB score, do you know what kind of data gets pulled into that?
They used to have their own data.
Yeah.
Now they're basically pulling everything from the feds.
Everything.
From that FMCSA score.
Incredible.
So yeah, they're boiling it all down and they have their algorithms and it says red, yellow, green,
yep.
You know, and that basically, and it's usually pretty accurate when I look at it.
Oh, for sure.
Because if I'll look at it online and then I'll go, man, these guys are going to definitely be green with it, you know, or red, depending on,
yeah.
You know, the ones that are in the middle, that's a little tougher to call, but yeah, I don't know though their exact algorithms, but it's pretty accurate.
Yeah. That makes sense. All right. So why get into a captive? You know, a lot of it, you know, the benefits of it, some of it's cost, some of it's, hey, I might be able to save money in different ways. Why should a company want to be in a captive? Why should that be their goal?
A little bit of self-determination. I mean, because at the end of the day, you're only paying mainly for your own losses,
yep.
You know, and when, as I see things going forward, the more people that we pull into captives, the tougher the standard market gets.
Yeah.
Because they're left with the people that can't get in.
Yep.
And so you kind of, if you don't get in, you're kind of, people will say, oh, it's risky to get into it. I think it's more risky not to.
To not get in. I agree. Well, because is there a perspective? So like, obviously the larger companies, you know, what, 90-some% of trucking companies out there are small fleets, owner operators, one to two mm-hmm. carriers. If you're a bigger carrier, if you're 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 driver carrier, there's not that many of them. And the best of the best are getting their insurance somewhere else. So you're fighting against, in essence, the worst. How does that process of building that resume? Is this something that can, it might be a weak time frame of pulling data, or is it something where, like you said, maybe I need to change something for a year or two?
Mm-hmm. Well, the loss runs and the SMS scores, the safety scores, are going to dictate a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as the documentation, and one of the things you talk about being the legal liaison and being the expert witness, the documentation is huge.
Yes.
If you go to court. And so that's what I've always worked on. That's probably the strongest point that I bring together along with the whole risk analysis. Cause there's some things I brought you guys in on one of them. And I said, you know, I don't have the time to do that. That's not what I do,
yeah.
But I know you need it.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll put together my stuff. At McConkie, we have in-house counsel.
I was going to ask about that.
And a whole claims department.
Okay.
We do have loss control. They're more on the safety side of the OSHA type stuff. But we do have some build outs for that. But I mean, we also bring you guys in for a lot of stuff that we just, you guys have it together for much less cost. I wouldn't want to do that to my customers, you know?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So speaking of the, you know, in-house representation, so claim happens, an accident happens. When you're in a group captive, what's that process look like?
Well, it's a lot different.
Yes.
Because you look at, after the claim, and one of my customers, he went in and they called him up and they said, what do you want to do? And he said, what do you mean what I want to do? Because he was so used to the standard company where they just went ahead and settled it. And then he went, oh my, what, they gave him that much?
Yeah.
You know,
do you want to fight this?
It's a gut check. Cause it's like, okay, you put your money where your mouth is.
Exactly.
You think it's not your fault. Let's go,
mm-hmm.
You know, but you're going to pay for it out of your own pocket to some extent. But, yeah. So, but normally when that happens, and that's why we have the in-house counsel in our claims department, because we had a lot of people coming to us going, well, what do you think we should do? And I'm kind of like, sometimes I can give them good guidance. Other times I'll punt and say, you know. And then we also bring in attorneys that we know that are really good. And that's one thing about the captive too, is that you can name your own attorneys.
Yep.
You don't have to have my cousin Vinny.
So much more control that you get to have.
Yeah. So, I mean, and the guys that I know are really good. I mean, and they're not ridiculously expensive. So it's like they saved. Recently, I put a gentleman into a captive, and somebody ran into one of his trailers, and it was kind of a, what should we do about it? So we got our attorneys involved right away and got in contact with the lady who was part of the accident, and they got out of her $1,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. They said, well, how can we help you? What can we do for you? I mean, without admitting anything. And so $1,000. I mean, if he'd let that go, I mean, somebody would have said, hey, you could get, who knows what, 100,000, 200,000, got $1,000.
So a lot of people, maybe they've heard the term captive before. And I know your company has been doing it for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of captives out there to help these companies get started, getting into it. I'm curious, what makes a good captive for a company wanting to work with, say, you? What should a good captive be? What should they look for when they're making that transition? Who to trust?
Well, I'm right on. Quite honestly, there aren't that many out there for each type of business.
Right.
So you definitely need somebody who's been through it before, who knows how to speak the language, has the connections with the companies,
yes,
knows how to position you and make it easy for the underwriters, because the underwriters today are a lot different than they were before. They don't get a whole lot of training up front. So I'm selling to probably a group of people.
Right.
And that's why I put together a whole risk analysis concept, a profile, the type of loss control reports I used to get on steroids. Because the loss control used to be safety.
Yeah.
Now I'm talking legalities. Now I'm talking policies and procedures to avoid legal issues. So yeah, I mean, you got to think pretty hard. And as we talked about before, if you get declined by one of these companies, you're not getting in.
Right.
So you better have somebody who knows how to make you look pretty attractive going in.
Yep.
And that's what we do. We definitely go through the whole process, you know. And if there's something you're doing with owner operators or the brokerage or something along those lines, we'll go, hey, you really need to have these contracts in place. And, you know, so that when they come out, they're going to ask the questions. And I already know what the questions are.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, and a lot of people ask me, well, why do I need this? Sometimes it's just window dressings. A lot of times it's substance, and because these people have been through some serious losses before, and they know what's going to happen.
Are there other challenges that we haven't addressed, sort of barriers to getting into being qualified to get into a captive? Are there other things that they need to think about?
There's a fear of a lot of people say it's upfront costs, and really it's not that bad relative to what you pay in a standard market.
Yes.
You know, and some of that money is what's called equity, and it's yours. It gains interest, it gains investment income, and but it's just in there to capitalize the company. So it's not bad at all.
And captive insurance in general, how is this regulated? Is it any different than other insurance? Like you said, it looks like I'm with Hartford, for example, but.
It's very regulated. The same as any other insurance company, there has to be a fronting company who's got an AM Best rating.
Yep.
So I think the minimum is A-.
Okay.
But the rest of them, yeah, the fronting company has to be there. And then they have to comply with the monetary authorities of whatever domicile they're in. And they're very serious about it, because that's their main income.
Yeah.
I mean, like Bahama, like Bermuda and Cayman, I mean, their monetary authorities are constantly, I mean, we have to get like resumes from the owners. I mean, like sometimes we have to get like people to recommend them, like, you know, witnesses that these are great people and those types of things. So yeah, it's, in fact, when I go to Bermuda for the captive that I'm on, the front page news says something about an insurance company. I mean, you don't see that.
No.
I mean, so the first time I went there, I thought, wow, these guys are really tense about this. So,
yeah.
But it's such a huge financial center that, yeah, they don't want to mess it up.
So I've chatted with actually a fleet before on a previous podcast where they were talking about the benefits of joining a captive. And one of the things, their biggest thing was it's the networking. So you're part of a group of 20 to 100 other companies. Explain the benefits of networking and how does that work?
Well, they have two meetings a year. And you want every so often you have to go back to the domicile that you're in. Like when you talk about domicile, there's a place where it's actually organized. There's right. Caymans, there's Bermuda, there's now the United States is starting to loosen up a little bit. Right. So there's Vermont and there's Tennessee. Yep. But yeah, they go to two meetings a year and they get to meet other people who are doing the same things, and they find out what kind of trucks they're running, what are the sensors having problems, you know, what kind of, is the DEF working on, you know, I mean, different things they get a chance to talk about and financial pieces as well, you know. But it was so funny, one of the first meetings I went with one of my customers, he goes, "Do you understand all this stuff?" I said, "You better hope I do." I said, "You know, otherwise you're in the boat without a rudder." So yeah, exactly. you better hope I understand it.
So maybe not a very popular question involved in this, but can you discuss the importance of, like, say, confidentiality, data security, things like that when it comes to captive insurance?
It's pretty much the same in this as it is in a standard company. I mean, you know, they have to guard their infrastructure as far as their data and their networks and everything else. And they have to have the endpoint detection and the multi-factor authentication. Exactly. So they follow the same rules, if not better than what most businesses do, because they're kind of seen as a financial sector, and there's a lot of liability sitting there.
Perfect. So, I mean, it sounds good. It looks good. Can you give an example of a success story for a company?
One of them, they were with a standard company for a number of years, and they had talked about it. They actually brought it up to me, and I was just kind of like, well, okay. Normally, it's like, you know, I got to go and explain, but they were like, you know, we've been like going every year with very little losses, and now, you know, here we go, you know, we keep getting increases, even though everything's going right for us.
Doing everything right, yeah.
And so I said, well, I did the net cost exhibit, the thing, and I said, you know what, you're absolutely right. I said, it's time for you to go in. And their equity, I mean, just keeps growing every year. I mean, now you don't get it until they close out a year, so you're usually going like a couple years, and people go, well, I got to wait that long to get it. I said, well, what would you get in standard market in 5 years?
Yeah.
So, you know, and the cost keeps coming down. Like the one I'm talking about, the trucker I'm talking about, they're paying about $3,500 a truck.
Wow.
I mean, in a standard market, if you're getting it for $7,500 or $8,000, that's pretty good.
Right.
So, I mean, and they've had a couple losses. So, I mean, they have equity in it. Their upfront costs have been lower. Their workers' comp costs are lower. And they had a couple work comp claims that weren't even their fault. But I said, man, you're lucky. I said, if you were in the standard market, you'd have an experience mod up here, and here's what you'd be paying for the next 3 years. So, yeah, there's a lot of benefits to it.
And I'm curious. So, you know, again, a lot of this outlook is, you know, a few years out, kind of a mentality for all of this too. I'm curious, what's the future of captives sort of look like? I don't know, if you were to look in a crystal ball and look 10 plus years down the road, what do you see changing?
I see I see like the group captives going to smaller companies.
Yes.
That's what they're trying to do right now.
They're trying.
It's obviously a lot harder. I mean, because you got all these different companies operating all these different ways, and you know, your experience is going to be a little more volatile.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way around it. But it's coming. It's coming. Now they're trying to do some property captives, which are a little tougher because you don't have a tail. It's less predictable. And, you know, so, you know, most truckers, you can, there's that band that's predictable under 150, under 100, and you can almost tell year to year. And then every once in a while they'll get a pop, but,
interesting.
But when it comes to property, you might go years and years and years, and then bam, have a huge fire. So it's just harder to get the reinsurance for it. And they've tried it in the past, and a couple of them crashed and burned already. So, we'll see how that plays out going forward.
I'm curious, how does your team sort of approach, like, you know, obviously our insurance company currently works with a lot of smaller fleets, and a lot of the things that they deal with is, hey, I don't want to pay for that. And so there's a lot of these insurance gaps potentially. Mm-hmm. How do you approach insurance gaps, especially as fleets are growing, what, you know, coverages? I know it's so unique and can get so specific for the type of companies they look at, but, I guess, How would you almost preach these smaller companies to be like, you need to think about this?
Well, the tough part with the smaller companies and being in standard markets, and I used to represent a number of standard companies, and I tell them, you have you ever guys thought about putting this coverage in or that coverage in? And they just don't do it.
Yeah.
So that's another thing with the captive. It's very broad.
Yeah.
There's something called knowledge and notice of occurrence that's under captives. And like, if you have a trucker out there and he does something, causes an injury, does whatever, and either doesn't tell you because he doesn't think it's a big deal or doesn't want you to know.
Right.
The standard companies, most of the trucking standard companies don't have that coverage there. So if they say, if he doesn't tell the owner, they can say, hey, this happened. You guys didn't tell us, and now it's declined. With no knowledge of occurrence, the actual management staff has to know about it before they can decline something like that.
Now, I am curious. So, you know, there's the big news happening right now when we're filming this is there's the port strike. There are some insurance coverages for businesses for if a big event, something like this happens, that you can sort of protect yourself in insurance coverage. I believe, I was looking this up, business interruption insurance. Is this something that's, you know...
It won't work in that case.
It won't work, okay.
Unfortunately. There is something called, in trucking insurance, it's called downtime.
Yes.
And if one of your trucks is damaged or something and you can't use that truck, they give you money for downtime. But yeah, when it comes to strikes, same thing as the pandemic.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people came to me and said, well, we need our business business income insurance. Put them on notice. And I did, but I knew it was coming back because there has to be physical damage before they pay out
that
the
makes
income.
Sense.
I mean, and technically there wasn't. Of course, they tried to twist it. A couple of attorneys tried to twist it, but it didn't hold water.
Do you see the port strike as being any kind of big impact with trucking and in insurance perspective?
Most of it, that stops a lot of things.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you can't unload containers, you got ships out there just sitting there. you got trucks sitting there. I mean, it snarls everything.
Yeah, and I know one of the things that we are recommending, like if those ships are now being rerouted to, say, Canada, well, then you got to think, oh, okay, what do I need to do? Can I haul into Canada? What requirements do I need?
Dispatcher's nightmare.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And then you're expanding. Hey, maybe I need to expand into other commodities. Maybe I usually do flatbed, but now I need to do reefer, or just being able to adapt. I'm curious about adaptability when it comes to captive insurance. Is that seen as a good thing? Can you guys help companies be able to adapt or open new lanes, new modes, new types of business? I know you know, these businesses are still trying to grow too.
Yeah, it's very flexible. I had one customer who's always being entrepreneurial, and they decided they wanted to have a car auction. Now they're a trucker, and they have 3PL stuff, and they go, we just want to, and they give me like a month, you know, and I'm. A month seems like a long time, but unless you're in insurance, because people are working out of their house. It's just crazy. But I finally slid it onto the captive and said, here's a new entity.
Yep.
And I had to do a couple things to you know, as far as what they call the garage keepers. So when they're moving cars around, they damage it. But I mean, other than that, I just slid it on. Everything went down. So yeah, there's a lot of flexibility, a lot of things you can do. And when I put, and every renewal, when you come up, it makes it real simple too, because all I need to know is how many trucks you have, what your payrolls are, and what your sales are.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, now I usually go out and do a pre-renewal meeting anyway, because they have like property and other stuff that's around outside of the captive, which we have all kinds of underwriters ready to do that for us as well.
That makes sense. I'm curious, looking into the future too. So we're potentially going to see a shift in more fuel efficient or zero emission trucks or tractors out there. Maybe it's electric, maybe it's CNG, maybe it's something else. I'm curious from the insurance perspective, whether it's from the cost to the, you know, these companies are thinking about making these transitions. What's your perspective? What advice do you have for these companies when they're thinking about this?
Well, I was just at the Maryland Motor Truck and the ATA representative was there, and she says, I'm not a ray of sunshine. I said, yeah, I know. Because she was just telling me about all these EV mandates coming and all this craziness, and we're not ready for it at all.
Nope. I mean, yeah.
We're not ready for it at all. So it's definitely a number of years off. But man, when it starts to happen, you're going to have heavier trucks because the EVs are going to be heavier. Yep. They're going to be more self-operating.
Yep.
It's going to take some of the liability off the truckers and place it back on the manufacturers. So that's a good thing for them.
Exactly.
But yeah, it there's a lot of unknown out there, and they're pushing real hard to get these EVs and at this point there's just absolutely no way. Because I mean, just to give you an example, I'm an investor in a lot of different things, and I've been looking into AI, and Microsoft just bought TMI. for no other reason than to power their own data centers. So, I mean, if you need that, how are we going to have all these trucks with EV mandates? I don't see how it's possible, but.
Yeah, I mean, and then EV too, you think in, you know, local regional is where it's going to start. You know, the battery packs aren't going to go so far.
Correct.
300, maybe 500 mile range, which is halfway decent. We're seeing that happening in California, Pepsi, you know, and Frito-Lay, that they're testing this out. But this transition also has to do with, hey, now we need to have infrastructure at our facilities for charging stations and things like that. Or even if it's CNG, maybe I need, you know, tanks and things like that. So there's upfront costs that way with a lot of this transition. It's a long tail transition. And eventually the efficiency might improve overall, but it is fascinating to watch, though.
Well, somewhere the power has to come from somewhere.
Exactly.
At the end of the day. Yeah. You know, I mean, whether it's fossil fuels or whether it's coal electric plants or whether nuclear electric plants, whatever it is, it has to come from someplace else. And we're nowhere near ready. Yeah. And I was reading one of the magazines, the infrastructure magazines, and it was talking about it was like a 15 truck fleet, and they were located in this town, and they said, we want to put everything EV. And the town basically did a calculation. They said, that's our entire electric grid for the whole town.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Interesting.
That's where we're at.
I am curious. So you're in York, Pennsylvania. We're here in Lititz. We're just sort of this Lancaster area. We're sort of near Three Mile Island, mm-hmm. and they're wanting to turn that back on, at least one of them. Thoughts on that? Sort of random.
The technology's gotten a lot better.
Yes.
You know, I was, I don't know, like about 10 years old when that thing almost, well, it basically did melt down.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it. Yeah. I mean, Japan, after having nuclear bombs dropped on them, have nuclear power plants. So, you know, okay.
Yeah, it's a public relations type of issue right now. But I agree with you. Like the energy and stuff like that has to come from somewhere. So
it does.
Wherever we get it,
I think the one said if you're powering your EV by something other than a windmill, you're just playing games.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
for sure.
So I don't mean to get into the politics of it.
No, it's interesting. I almost want to dive into it, but I won't. I'm curious, are there other things, if you're looking to crystal ball, whether it's a trucking, transportation, safety, what do you see? You sort of mentioned, you know, autonomy. There's pros to it to some degree. I actually interviewed Kodiak AI, and they basically are having fleets right now, or a couple loads doing it by themselves. Mm-hmm. They even have a program where they're doing it off roads, self-driving, which is fascinating. But do you see, I this is sort of maybe transportation specific, because that you're creating different modes of or hubs of locations then for these fleets to be able to go transport, change those loads, you know, the whole process is going to potentially change. What's your perspective on that through the insurance lens or these businesses?
Well, there's definitely going to be a lot more metrics available to everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
To say the least. That's true. You know, the dispatcher's job should get a lot easier.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want that job right now for anything. That's like being a claims adjuster. Yeah. I wouldn't want to do that either. Cause nobody's ever happy, but yeah, they should have a lot more data available to them in real time. You know, what's going on in different routes. You know, what's this port's now open, you know, and those types of things, you know, as provided that everybody does their part in inputting what's going on.
Interesting. Yeah. And I'm curious, so, you know, always there's this argument that's been going for years, obviously, but the argument of there's a driver shortage or there's at least a lack of quality drivers, mm-hmm. Safe drivers, good record drivers, things like that. The insurance perspective, which camp do you tend to think lean towards and why?
As far as being self-driving?
Driver shortage, or is there a driver shortage?
Oh, sure.
And do you think
there has been? I mean, you know, there's a shortage of a lot of things.
Everything,
I mean, insurance is like, nobody wants to do insurance. I mean, you know, people get in by accident and, you know, but, yeah, I mean, there are shortages right now. And I mean, if you talk to, the guys that I know who are on the hiring end of it, they're like, you know, finding somebody who will not blow up their safety scores.
Yeah.
And somebody whose PSP and MVR are acceptable is really difficult. And, you know, and a lot of them don't want to do long haul. Yep. So, I mean, yeah, it's a challenge. So, I mean, the truckers have to provide an environment that's really conducive to keeping people, low turnover.
If I look 30, 50 years down the road, I definitely see truckers being a little bit more local, regional, which is what they want anyway. Mm-hmm. And then there's still going to be the same amount of drivers, I believe. It's just that gap of that long haul transition there's going to be more flexibility with that, I believe. And I think it shouldn't be like a negative to trucking. It should all help lift that. And there again, there's always going to be more and more stuff.
And a lot of it will depend on what the infrastructure is within the United States roads. Because, I mean, a lot of the roads you're trying to, I talked about the lady who ran into the back of that trailer. Well, they had like two stoplights, like one after another.
Yeah.
I mean, who's at fault? But, you know, they just gave them $1,000 and went on their way. So that worked out well. But I mean, in another case, it may not.
Yeah.
You know, solving all kinds of things like Route 30, they quote unquote fixed it about two decades ago, and now it's back to where it was. You're getting off of 222, taking it on 30. I mean, yeah, they need to, there's a lot of things need to be solved to keep drivers, because that's just a headache for drivers.
For sure.
The good thing is a lot of them are automatic now.
Yes.
I mean, some guys love the manual, but I mean, that's going away. I don't think many of the new generation are too excited to get into.
We teach both here at our CDL school, but yeah, definitely it's that default is.
It's like my personal car when I had one. I mean, it's fun to drive that.
Oh, heck yeah.
But when you got to drive it every day, and especially if you're in and out of cities, and yeah, it's the novelty wears off pretty quickly.
For sure. All right, so I think we're sort of wrapping up our time here. Okay. You know, we talked a lot about this, and, you know, is there any other advice that you have for companies thinking about jumping in? Any other last thoughts or advice that you want to bring up? And then, of course, how can they contact you?
Well, I mean, I think the best thing is to get somebody who's been through the process before and can take a look at you from all aspects and help you with whatever you need to do to get into the captive, to present you in the best picture, and then has an understanding even after you're in the captive.
Correct.
Because, I mean, there's a lot of things that take place, and they're going to come at you with different terms and all kinds of funny stuff, and they're big, long financial reports, and you know, you need somebody who's able to kind of go through all that with you. So, I mean, a lot of people have access to them. Not many people really have a good command of it. And especially getting in. I mean, that day one is, and sometimes telling somebody don't go in now is the best advice. Because if you get declined, they have record of it now. You were declined.
And you were declined. Why would we want you?
Yeah. Or to go to another captive, because they always ask it, has they ever been declined before? So it's one of the things. But I work with McConkey Insurance. I've been with them about 13, 14 years. My phone number is 717-725-0607. Again, 717-725-0607. Give me a call. I will. I also have a brochure I can email you if you give me your email address, and it gives you a QR code that you can set an appointment with me, and I'll come in and I'll take an honest look at it. And another thing with McConkey is we are not a commission-based sales organization.
Yes.
So, I mean, if it's not the right thing, I'm not going to try to shoehorn you, you know, give you bad advice and just try to get you in for the commission. No, I don't want anybody mad at me, especially in the trucking industry, because it gets around quick.
And we'll have his information as well in the description down below. If you have any thoughts, any questions that you have about this, is my fleet ready? Hey, can you look at my thing? Let us know in the comments down below. We'll pass that on to Todd, and we'll try to help answer those questions. Of course, you can contact him. If you have any questions with CNS, Compliance Navigation Specialist, CNS Insurance, if you're a smaller fleet, you know, if you're looking into getting into trucking, CDL School, all the different pieces that we do here within our five companies, you can also find that information down below. Basically, we just want to help keep you, both of us, we just want to find a way to keep you looking good, looking healthy, being safe, and then basically help make money. That's
being
in the end what we want. Yeah,
being prosperous.
With that, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, I mean, as I said, one of the biggest identifiers of what they need from you comes from my risk analysis.
Right.
Because I sit there and I'll tell you, hey, you know, you need your driver qualification files done better, and here's changes, and these guys know that they do it all day. I could do it, but you do what you like because you're better at it. And I pass stuff off to people who enjoy it or are better or are set up much better than we are for that.
He did a tour around our office. His whole teams, different teams doing all these different pieces, and yeah. But yeah, again, thank you so much for joining us. Oh,
absolutely. Thanks again, Luke.
And as always, stay safe out there.